You are listening to the AU Wishbone, almost credible sports discussion on the War Eagle Sports Radio Network.
A miracle in Jordan Hare! A miracle in Jordan Hare!
We welcome you to Jordan Hare Stadium for tonight's game.
It's the Wishbone Podcast, your source for Auburn football discussion and commentary. Here are your hosts, Van Allen Plexico and John Ringer.
Hello and welcome to the AU Wishbone, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment in association with the WarEagleReader.com and the War Eagle Sports Radio Network. I'm Van Allen Plexico and I'm joined as always by my co-host...
I'm John Ringer.
And John, we have one of our less eventful last couple of weeks, but we're going to sift through everything that's been going on Auburn-wise, and we're going to talk about it tonight, and we'll see what all we have. We should have some good listener questions, hopefully. I have a couple of bonus factoids of the week to go along with the usual factoid of the week, and we have another few things to talk about. There was the NFL draft a week or so ago. We had a couple of commitments, and we have some other things to dig into. So let's see. What sort of announcements from your side do we have?
We will not be discussing any NFL suspensions related to deflating of footballs.
No. I've not even been paying any attention to that story. I've always said the NFL exists for one reason and one reason only in my world, and that is to give money to former Auburn players that succeeded and did well. The only announcement I have on a personal note for those that might be interested is, and I'll probably mention this a couple more times as we get closer, but the contracts are signed, the ink is dry, the faxes have been sent, and I'm going to appear August 1st at the Hoover Library in Hoover, Alabama, near Birmingham. They are having a big festival of some sort, a big book festival, and they're going to have authors in, and Bobby Nash and I are going to do a panel in their big auditorium for about 300 people, and we're going to talk about something or other of interest to science fiction and fantasy, and we're going to take questions, and so that should be a lot of fun. So if you're interested in such things, mark your calendars for August 1st. I'll be either driving down with a family or flying down solo. We're not entirely sure yet now because there may be some conflicts with my daughter's, you know, schedule for band camp and stuff like that, but we'll see how it goes. So one way or another, I will be there August 1st. So you feel like driving down from Virginia for that?
I don't hold your breath.
Oh, dang it. All right. Well,
maybe it'll be streamed online or something.
Oh, yeah. I got to think that maybe at least one of the broadcast networks will be there, sure. So, or C-SPAN, maybe. Here we are in the off season. It's May. You know, the only thing I've really been focused on lately is Chelsea winning the premiership and Avengers Age of Ultron coming out. So what have I been missing, John?
What have you been missing? Well, a few bits of news. First, on the bad news front.
Whoa, hold on. Before we get to the bad news, we would be remiss if we didn't say the good news, which is that the softball team won the SEC tournament.
It's very exciting. They're off to the College Softball World Series, getting ready to host a regional. But yeah. Yes, they did win the SEC tournament this weekend. That was very exciting, very dramatic.
You know, going into that game, I was talking to my wife. I said, well, see, first, we were out that day, and so I set the DVR to record it. I got something to say about that. But first, when I saw that we were playing Tennessee instead of Florida, because Florida was the number one seed, we were number two, and Tennessee was on down a little bit. Mm-hmm. And I said to her, I said, you know, this is the classic setup where it's either one thing or the other. And it's always either one thing or the other, right? When you don't get the top team, when you get the dark horse, right, it either means that this team, that the team you're playing, like, lucked out, went on a hot streak, and it's going to come to a sudden end and you're going to kill them, or it means that they've suddenly caught fire and can beat anybody, including the top seed and you, you know? It's always either hot or cold. Either they're on fire and nobody can stop them, or they they're one of those teams like when Butler gets to the Final Four and then gets crushed by Duke or something, you know. So
that's right.
And it turned out in the first couple of innings to be that they were flaming out, we were crushing them. And then it turned out that, no, they're on fire and they're coming back and taking the lead. And I'm sitting there going, I've watched this whole game and we're going to lose, of course. Well, now here's what happened that really, really just drove me nuts. ESPN had the game listed as a two-hour event. And I thought, well, baseball games can go longer than 2 hours, I think. So I'm going to go ahead and add an extra hour. You know, you can go in and U-verse and add time. So I made it a three-hour recording. I had no idea that softball games that are supposed to go seven innings last over 3 hours, not even counting extra innings. My three-hour recording ran out before they even went to extra innings. It was like a four-hour game.
Baseball takes softball, both take too long now.
My goodness, 4 hours for a seven-inning plus extra softball game? So I didn't get to see the ending, but I've seen enough highlights now to get the gist of it. So, and a couple of people sent me links and stuff, which I appreciate. So what were your thoughts about the softball team there?
It was exciting, and I'm very happy for them. And it's funny, I had a guy at my house on Friday giving us an estimate about doing some work on something, and his daughter played on a team with a girl who from Virginia who's one of the pitchers for the Auburn team now. So,
oh, cool.
That was cool. Exciting. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Okay. Now, you said there was some bad news. Go ahead and tell the folks, share that with us.
The bad news that everybody already knows is Elijah Daniel was arrested and has been kicked off the team. He was probably going to be a starting defensive end and was really kind of coming into his own. And had, you know, an experienced player, a guy who played basically every game the last 2 years.
Yeah.
And had a good future ahead of him. So that's tough to see, and I feel bad about it. And sorry to see he's gone, but, you know, he made a bad decision. And, you know, I hope he gets stuff straightened out.
Yeah, it's really hard to fathom. You know, we see this over and over, and it's still just hard to imagine how young guys can have so much potential ahead of them and just do stuff that you just think, what are you thinking? What in the world are you thinking? I mean, it's one thing, you know, like when Mike Dyer was caught up in, you know, some stuff with some bad influences and people around him. And I have a lot more sympathy. At least I can kind of understand when these young guys they come from a bad neighborhood, they have bad influences around them, and if they go back home and hang around them, they get dragged back in. I mean, it's almost like the mafia. You get dragged back in. I can almost understand that. But when guys just like go out and do something utterly insane on their own, I guess, I just don't understand it. You got too much ahead. You got too much ahead of you to throw it away like that, it seems like. I just don't know. Well,
there's not a lot else to say there. It's a dumb thing to do, and he's paying the price for it. So
yeah, I believe there was a little event up in Chicago last couple of weeks.
The your visit?
Well, besides that, there were banners all over the place for my visit.
No, the NFL draft happened in Chicago. They moved out of New York because they're doing work on the building in New York where drama takes place, and several Auburn players got drafted. And several Auburn players didn't get drafted, who probably should have been.
Mm-hmm.
Sammy Coates went to the Steelers. Angelo Blackson went to Tennessee. Cameronis Payne went to Carolina. Gabe Wright went to the Lions, kind of actually taking Nick Fairley's place. Mm-hmm. And C.J. Uzomah, mm-hmm. was a bit of a surprise, got drafted into the Bengals. But, you know, Reese Dismukes, Corey Grant, Dick Marshall didn't get drafted. Patrick Miller left school early, didn't get drafted.
Well, we saw that kind of coming, though. But.
Well, but there's a lesson here for everybody. I mean, you know, a lot of guys think, I'm a starter in the SEC and I'm a good player or whatever. I'm going to go make money in the NFL or whatever. But
right.
The Reese Dismukes thing is just a shocking one.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I mean, that was the thing. Would you have ever bet that CJ would get drafted and Reese would not?
No way.
No way. That's amazing. So, and even in some ways, even worse, I guess, Reese got picked up by the Steelers, but they've got a center and they're in no hurry to get rid of him from what I understand. So, I'm just not quite sure, what will become of him now. I mean, once you get, I guess, could you don't get traded, right? If you're just signed on after the draft, how does that even work? You get waived and then somebody else has to pick you up after that. And that seems like at that point, the likelihood gets really thin.
It does, but I think a lot of teams in the NFL are worried about offensive line injuries. And also rookies, they have like a practice squad kind of thing. They can keep a few players on. It's five or seven guys that they can keep on like the whole season that are rookies. So yeah. I could see that being a scenario for him where they're worried about offensive line depth and they keep him on there to practice and stuff. So I think that could work out for him.
All right. Well, what do you think about Sammy going to the Steelers? Do you know anything about, I mean, from what I've heard, that's not a bad deal for him, right?
I think it's a good spot for him. I think, I mean, they have Roethlisberger's a good experienced quarterback, is pretty accurate. And I think they've done pretty well at developing young receivers and but they need some more deep threat kind of guys. And I think he could clearly be that guy. I mean, a few years ago they had Mike Wallace who came out of Ole Miss and was kind of a speed burner guy, a straight down the field kind of guy.
Yeah.
And he had a lot of success with him. And I think that Coates could do the same kind of thing for them where he could really stretch defenses and make big plays and stuff for them. And so I think it's a good fit. I think he could do well there.
Well, that's cool. Any other draft related stuff? I know that. Well, one that's sort of Auburn-related, obviously, is that the Rams took Todd Gurley, and that was just kind of interesting because they have Trey Mason. And, I mean, you know, the question was kind of, are they not happy with Trey, or are they just trying to stock up several pretty good running backs? And what does this mean in terms of Trey's role on the team? What do you think about that?
I mean, I think they took Gurley because they thought he was a great player, I think. And the other thing is Gurley's coming off the injury. You don't know if he's going to be 100% to start the season and stuff. He's more of a long-term kind of pick, I think. I wouldn't expect him to be full speed at, you know, the first game. But you can't, you know, where the NFL is now, you can't survive with one running back on a team. You got to have multiple guys to carry the load. The other part is I think they look at Todd Gurley and see, you know, Adrian Peterson. I think you saw it in that game, like when he ran that kickoff back against Auburn.
Yeah.
You could see it. And there wasn't anybody in the world that was going to stop him that day. So,
yeah.
What you've seen him when he's healthy and 100% and the offensive line's blocking, he's very impressive. So, it's going to make things tough for Trey. He's going to have his work cut out for him. But, I mean, I feel like, you know, they'll both probably get carries, and eventually, you know, if Gurley, you know, blossoms and is great there, I see Trey moving on somewhere else to be the running back, which is unfortunate, but that's what I see happening.
So I shouldn't go buy my Rams tickets again another year then, huh?
Probably not.
Man, they keep bringing Auburn guys in here, and then every time I think about getting tickets, they go or something. So let's see. Now, we had some interesting stuff happening with recruiting this week and last week or so with regard to defensive backs. First, what did we gain in terms of corners and safeties and whatnot?
Well, we gained two new players basically for next year's class. One is a commit from nearby Auburn, John Broussard, who's a four-star cornerback, who's more of a cover guy that everybody seems to be very excited about. And then also we got a guy who basically named Jamal Dean, who enrolled at Ohio State, was not cleared by their medical staff. So he left high school already this year, enrolled at Ohio State, was not cleared by their doctors to play football, said he was going to transfer from Ohio State and is going to enroll at Auburn and transfer to Auburn. And Auburn's doctors have already said they'll clear him apparently. So.
What I was seeing was that Dr. Andrews, who everybody respects, I think pretty much in the whole country, that he was saying that if he continued pretty solid rehabs, in other words, that says to me he's not ready yet any more than he would have been at Ohio State.
Sure.
But he's going to rehab and, and eventually will be. Now, tell me this. Will he be able to play immediately, or has he got to sit out a year since he's coming from Ohio State, or how does that work?
No, he's got to sit out a year.
Okay, so, so
even though he never played a game for them, or he basically just went to a couple of spring practices.
Yeah. So one way or another, rehabbing or not, he wouldn't have gotten to play for us 2015 anyway.
No.
So he'll have a year to get healthy, and it'll all be good.
That's right.
Well, that's cool. So, go ahead.
I don't know which year he's going to count on. That's a good question.
Okay.
Theoretically, I think we'll have a scholarship available. We should count on this fall. But I mean, to me, he's in that group with Broussard and a couple other guys that are coming in this fall where, you know, we're going to have a lot of competition at quarterback for in 2016 season.
Yeah.
We're probably going to start, Holsey and Jonathan Jones this year, and they're both seniors. And after that, it's wide open. I mean, who are the backups and who's going to take over next year? I think there's a lot of opportunity for some of these new guys to come in there and compete. Well, and I think, Tavarius Robinson and Muschamp will play whoever is the best player. They don't care at that position whether you're a freshman or not. So.
Well, I was going to say, we have one scholarship now available.
That's true.
So there's one. Tangentially to that, and not that tangentially to it, really, Stephen Davis Jr., okay, mm-hmm. He committed a while back. You know, he hadn't even, I guess, graduated high school yet. Mm-hmm. But he had already, committed back months ago. And there's a picture. I posted a picture on our Facebook page of Stephen and Stephen Jr. With Coach Garner. And it's funny because Jr. has the number two jersey that he wears in high school as an Auburn jersey. And Stephen Davis's dad is standing there with his old 48 jersey holding it up and grinning. That's pretty cool. It's a cool picture. So if you haven't seen it, go over to the AU Wishbone page on Facebook and you can see that picture. It's pretty cute of them in the locker room with the. It's good to see old number 48, there with his jersey. That just made me feel good from those great days back in 94 and 95. The 93 played a little bit. The thing was, Stephen Davis Jr. has kind of pulled back a little bit because, the two things I heard him say. Did you hear this? The two things I heard him say was he said, I think I committed too early, and he kind of wants to kind of back off a little bit. Which I mean, that happens some, and you don't always lose those guys. They just kind of want to be romanced a little bit, by the other girls at the party and not just one, And then the other thing that I think he said was that he was surprised or wasn't expecting Auburn to be signing so many safeties and corners lately. And so I guess he feels like it's getting a little crowded in the defensive backfield, and that's not what he was expecting. So what's your reaction to that?
I mean, I think we do have a lot of young talent back there at safety or whatever, but, my feeling is always like there's a lot of opportunity back there, and Tavarius Robinson and Muschamp are good coaches. You have to go where you feel like you can be developed and you'll fit in. The fact that he's Stephen Davis' son should give Auburn an advantage, but he's going to go where's the best place for him. So, I'm not sweating it, I guess. Yeah. I mean, I hope he comes to Auburn and I think he'll be a good player for us, but yeah.
Yeah, I get the sense that these guys feel like they get married too soon and then don't get to date. You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
So,
I mean, my general position is I don't worry. It's May.
Yeah.
We're talking about guys are going to sign next February. I'm not losing sleep. But the other, on the bad news recruiting front, we lost our top commitment, which is Nate Craig, a five-star wide receiver out of Florida who, has been talking to Florida State and other people now. So, he had been committed to Auburn for a while and decommitted, and he may still end up signing with Auburn, but he's not committed to Auburn right now. But again, it's May. It's a long way away. We'll see what happens between now and then.
I would just hate to lose Craig and Stephen Davis Jr. both. I mean, we go from having a five and a four star who's a legacy to having neither one of them. That would really be a blow, I think. It would make me wonder what's going on with Muschamp and T-Rob that suddenly we start losing people. So, but we'll see. We'll see how it goes. So, the quarterbacks, there was an interesting article on Saturday's, my gosh, no matter what, slap me in the head.
Oh my God!
Yeah, there was an interesting article on Saturday's Down South ranking the SEC's quarterbacks after spring practice. I assume I think you sent that to me, right? So you've seen it.
I did.
All right. What are your immediate thoughts when you see kind of how they're ranked?
It's about what I expect. I mean, in the big picture, Dak Prescott is clearly the best quarterback in SEC coming back. I mean, he as a not the whole team, but just him as a player, he's the best at that position, I think. He's the most experienced, he's most talented. I think he lost so much around him that his stats won't be as good this year. But after that, I mean, I think there's a group, you know, to me, Josh Dobbs at Tennessee and Jeremy Johnson at Auburn, are the next group. They put Brandon Allen of Arkansas ahead of both of them, which that was – I know you were shocked about.
It's got to be because he's a senior, right? I mean, that's the only thing.
I think that's part of it.
It's the only thing.
He's had a lot of experience.
Yeah. What else could he
– I mean – Well, I mean, before you laugh, let me tell you his numbers.
I know he had pretty good numbers, but that's just not what that team does. All right, go ahead.
I mean, he completed 56% of his passes. Not great, but not terrible. 2,200 yards, 20 touchdowns, 5 interceptions.
Yeah, 20 touchdowns, 5 interceptions, not too bad. So,
no. But, I mean, again, they didn't throw it a ton. You know, I mean, he threw it less than Nick Marshall did. So not a lot of attempts per game. I think part of it is you're right that he's a senior and he started a lot of games. He's solid, but he's not anything special, I don't think.
Yeah.
He's dependable. For that offense, he's good.
Would you have Brandon Allen and Joshua Dobbs above Jeremy Johnson?
The Dobbs one I get. I mean, that guy was great the second half of last year when they played him. I think Prescott's the best quarterback in the conference coming in. And after that, I think Dobbs and Jeremy Johnson are the next two best quarterbacks. And Dobbs was great last year. He was excellent. So I don't have a big problem with ranking him there. I mean, I think he's going to be – they have a lot of young talent on that team. And I think he's going to be really good going forward. So.
Yeah. What do you think about Jacob Coker down at number 8?
Well, yeah, that really broke my heart.
just above the Florida quarterback. Think about
The other one is, to me, like Kyle Allen of A&M, they had him 6th. Mm-hmm. I'd put him ahead of the guy who's coming in at Georgia.
Yeah.
And probably ahead of Brandon Allen. I think he's probably the 4th best quarterback in the conference.
Yeah, you'd think so.
You know, our defense wasn't great last year, and he carved us up like, you know, like a warm knife through Jell-O. But it was he showed a lot last year. I think he's going to be, you know, and clearly he's going to get better and better. So I would have him ranked higher. You know, Coker hasn't done anything. He didn't win the job last year against, you know, Blake Sims, who was good but wasn't great. So, and then look at the rest of the guys coming back. I mean, Matty Mock at Missouri, solid, but meh, you know, Anthony Jennings or the other guy at LSU, you know, not great, not terrible. Patrick Toles at Kentucky, he's pretty good.
Yeah, I thought he was pretty good. Yeah.
I liked him. He's got potential, but the rest of the, you know, other than that, you got the guy that transferred from Clemson to Ole Miss that's already gotten arrested or whatever. you know, Coker, nobody knows if he's any good or not. You get new guys at South Carolina that nobody, you know, thinks a lot of, but you always think with Spurrier that he's going to be able to develop him into something. It's hard for me to believe their quarterbacks are going to be, you know, awful, awful.
Yeah. I would agree. I guess the only thing holding Jeremy back right now is he hasn't played a lot other than in spots, you know. And so I'm just really looking forward to him getting a few games under his belt and seeing what people think of him then, because I think we pretty well know what to expect. I feel pretty good about that. So.
Oh, yeah. I think he's going to be excellent, and we're going to be very happy. And I think people are going to look back and go, you know – Nick Marshall was really good, and he was really valuable. And the biggest thing that Nick Marshall had that Jeremy needs to have is that calm. Oh, yeah. And Jeremy talked about that in the there was a press conference like after spring practice, after they named him the starter, when he talked about this, how that was the one thing he tried to take away from Nick Marshall, was how he never got rattled. So
yeah, that's what we need, is Jeremy out there with the shark eyes and that calm jaws demeanor, and then he gets you. So, yeah, I think that, but I mean, that's the thing, that Jeremy is very calm and cool, collected too. And a lot of the interviews I've been hearing with him and a lot of the things I've been reading about him the last couple of months have indicated that one of the things he's worked on just as hard as his technical ability and his passing is his leadership, you know, is more of being, mm-hmm. being a leader. And that doesn't always, you know, the quiet guys always say, well, I try to lead by example, and that's all well and good, but you also need to lead by leading.
That's right.
So hopefully he will certainly do that. He has the potential, I think. I mean, he's a big guy. Everybody likes him. He commands a lot of respect. So surely he can step up and take command. I'm just really looking forward to that. Also, we got some schedule information the last couple of days. What do you make of the 2015, 2016, 2017 schedules? And we also have a little bit for 2021.
Well, the news today was basically that we were adding Georgia Southern,
yeah.
which is a dangerous team,
yeah.
you know, not a cupcakey small school team. They gave Florida everything they wanted last year.
More than they wanted. They
that's
won.
Right. So I'm just saying, they gave them everything that, yeah. you know. This is one of those teams you better be ready. They run a different system now, but it's, you know, they're still really dangerous. So, this is a good non-conference game. I'm glad. I'd rather us play teams from the area than play some, you know, small school from Kansas or Texas or somewhere. So, so on the non-conference schedule side, I mean, the big games we have, we play Louisville this coming season in the George Dome. Yeah. And then in 2016, we play Clemson at home. Mm-hmm. We play Arkansas State at home. And then in 2017, we play at Clemson.
Yeah, we open with Georgia Southern and then play at Clemson.
Right.
The other teams, though, are the ones that are – I mean, we're pretty scraping the bottom of the barrel in a lot of ways. I mean, the 2015 other – other than Louisville, we got Jacksonville State, San Jose State, and Idaho. That's pretty stinky. But, the schedule we're going to already going to have is so tough, and then you throw in Louisville. So it'll be fine. I'm just saying that looking at it purely in a vacuum of who the non-conference player teams are that we play, it looks pretty bad. 2016 Clemson – But Arkansas State is never bad, and Louisiana Monroe is not that horrible. Then we got Alabama A&M. So 2016, you realize that the schedule in 2016 is going to be pretty identical to the 2014 schedule. Throw in Clemson and Arkansas State, that's pretty tough. Okay, and then 2017 we open with Georgia Southern, we go to Clemson, and then we come back home and have Mercer and Louisiana Monroe later. Mercer, I didn't even know they played football, much less that they played football against Division I teams. So that's – I honestly thought Mercer was like a college you go to learn secretarial skills or something. I no offense to the Mercer. I'll get 15 emails and tweets from Mercer from people whose sister went to Mercer, and I apologize to them.
Oh, it's on now.
Yeah, well
– the Mercer people are coming for me.
Mercer's on the warpath. And then in 2020 and 2021, we've got the Cal and at Cal. And then we add Georgia State in 2021, too. So I'm not quite sure why they're skipping 2018, 19, and half of 20. But we know what we're going to be doing in 2021, apparently. So we got that going for us, when not a single player currently on the team will even be on the team anymore.
That's how non-conference scheduling works. You got to look way in the future.
Well, you know what's going to be cool is that in 2021, Coach Rhett Lashley is going to lead us out to Berkeley to play Cal. That's going to be awesome. He'll be in like his second year. You know, Gus will have won his second Super Bowl with the Rams. Let's just say, it'd make me happy. And Coach Lashley will be taking Auburn out to play Cal at Berkeley. That'd be pretty cool, huh?
It's a good, interesting plan.
Okay, it works for me. All right. What do you think? Now, you raised this question to me. I'm going to let you answer it first. The neutral site one-off games, Alabama plays one every year because they're Alabama and they like to show off. We are in them occasionally. What do you think about them? The Georgia Dome or Houston or Jerry World or whatever?
I mean, I get the need for them. It's kind of the new version of the kickoff classic games they used to have in the 80s, 90s. And I mean, to me, I'd much rather have a home-and-home series where we have another team come into Jordan-Hare, we go to their stadium. I think that's, you know, more fun for the fans, and I think it's that's more of what college football is about to me. But if you can't get a neutral site, I mean, I can't get a home-and-home series, then you need to do a neutral site game sometimes. And I think these are high-profile games. They're on TV. And if we can't get a team to come to Auburn, this is the only way we can play them, then we'd do it. So, I mean, they're still talking at Florida State about a neutral site game. I mean, I like Louisville as a neutral site game, and they're a good team. It's Petrino, so that'll be fun to go after him. But, you know, down the road, if they came, we had a neutral site game against, for example, us against Texas and Jerry World in Dallas.
Yeah.
How'd you feel about that, or Oklahoma?
That'd be up.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
Heck yeah.
So, you know, I could see that.
Yeah, I like it. Well, I like playing them in Atlanta because they put them on the first week, and I'm always in Atlanta on the first week of the season. So it's easier for me to go to see Auburn play further away from me in Atlanta than it is for Auburn to play in, you know, anywhere around here even, because I'm already going to be right down the street from them. You know, when they played in Kansas State, it was not that far from us, but we still had to drive across the entire state of Missouri to get there. So, let's see. You had a note here about this year's schedule after spring practice.
Well, I just wanted to ask you, you know, knowing what you know about the team right now, how do you feel about this year's schedule, looking back at it, about what you know about our team and the other teams, like the good and bad of the schedule?
Well, I mean, obviously the good of the schedule is Georgia and Alabama at home. I'm a very big opponent, a very big detractor of that arrangement over time. But you got to admit, as horrible as it is overall, and as wretchedly horrible as it is, it was last year and it will be next year. The only silver lining is the odd numbered years when we get them both at home.
That's right.
It giveth and it taketh away, and it's giveth-ing this year. And so having Georgia and Alabama at home is a huge advantage for this team, especially when Georgia and Alabama both, wouldn't you say they have a chance to be down a little bit from last year, both of them?
I would say that's fair. And the other thing is, in the SEC, you always measure your schedule by what your road games are. And this year, our road games are LSU. Yeah,
which is down a little bit.
Down a little bit. Good, but not
what they were.
What they were three years ago.
Yeah.
Kentucky, dangerous, scrappy.
Yeah, they've caused us some surprise heartbreak over the years here and there.
Yes. Arkansas, that's going to be a dangerous one. He's got them playing a lot better. And Texas A&M, which will be another dangerous game. Good offensive team. Now they got a much better defensive coordinator. So,
well, we haven't lost at Texas A&M in about 45 years, right? Something like that.
Something like that. So that'll be, looking at those games, I mean, probably the Arkansas one maybe scares you the most.
But I have a new nickname for Arkansas Stadium.
Okay.
The Smokehouse. We're going to venture into the Smokehouse and get us some pulled pork.
I
just smoked up a couple of pork shoulders last weekend, and I've got a freezer full of pulled pork. Man, that was good. I ate about 7 sandwiches with it because I knew it would never be as good again as it was right there when it came out of the smoker. Nope. I ate about 7 of them, and I just wanted to die.
Nice.
Let's see. Is it time? Should we bring Mira out?
Yes.
It's time.
It's time for listener questions. Dun, dun, dun. On the AU Wishbone Podcast.
Thank you, sweetheart. So, what do we have?
All right, we got a few leftover questions from last week that I'm going to get to before I get to the new ones. The first one is from War Room Eagle, who says, now that Jeremy is the starting QB, will there be a Sean White package like there was a Jeremy package last year? Would it even be used? What would it be?
We always talk about this. If there's like a Sean, there'll be like a Sean White package. There'll be, was it Jason Smith? the receiver that.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
We talked about that. You and I both know when they say they'll do something like that, it'll happen about three times the entire season. I mean, given the choice between running something like that and running the tailback off tackle, Gus will go with the tailback 99% of the time. We know this.
It's true.
Every now and then he gets a little crazy and he likes to do the crazy play, but most of the time, particularly when we're in the meat of the season, he likes to stay sort of traditional. It's weird to think that, I mean, you know, there's such a contradiction, right? Because everybody thinks of Gus, they think, oh, wacky, crazy, you know, throw the rule book out, you know, all this. And yet, honestly, Gus is just about Pat Dye a lot of the time, you know?
Mm-hmm. That's right.
He really is. I don't think that these guys on the networks and nationally that don't watch every second the way we do fully understand just how conservative of an offensive play caller he is most of the time, and particularly in crunch time. If we're playing Arkansas State or something, yeah, he's going to do a triple reverse pass, you know, upside, standing on your head, whatever. But no, I think that, yeah, I think Sean White will have some plays, and they'll get him in some meaningful time. But it won't be as much as you might think, and the other guys won't be as much as you think either. Now, if they cannot – here's the thing. If Jeremy Johnson gets banged up the least bit, or if his running is not quite what we hoped and kind of what we need it to be to make everything else work, then I can see them going to some more Wildcat-type stuff or other packages. And I know that's not quite what he's asking, but I'm just talking about in terms of how many times will Jeremy not be the quarterback when we're on offense. And I think that it really will come down not to so much trying to get Sean in as trying to generate something running from the quarterback position. What do you think about that?
I think that's right. I think it'll be more trying to take advantage of a tired defense by bringing a running quarterback out there and having him run around. So yeah. That's the only thing I could see.
Yeah.
But no, I don't see Sean White getting a lot of minutes unless we're up big in a game.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good that would be the other situation, yeah.
Our next question comes from Ryan Sterrett.
So hopefully Sean plays a lot of fourth quarters this fall.
That's right.
Sorry, go ahead.
He says, Ryan Sterrett has a couple questions. He says, currently, Jeremy Johnson is 45 passing TDs behind Pat Sullivan for the Auburn record, true or false?
The record is in sight. I don't know what the number actually is, so I don't have any idea.
The number is 53.
Oh, okay.
So this is the thing, you know, and Ryan basically says Jeremy will leave Auburn as the school record holder for passing touchdowns.
So that means he has to get about 25 the next two seasons.
Because
he's only got two seasons left. He's not going to have a four-year, you know, he's not going to be David Green out there for 4 years lighting it up. So,
go ahead.
25 touchdown passes a season. Is that doable?
I think it's doable. I mean, I think that would be a lot, but also I think, you know, he's less likely to run it in. And I said, you know, you figure he's going to be close to the leaders in the SEC. That'd be about that number. Let's talk about some rough numbers for Jeremy Johnson for a minute here.
Okay.
Let's think about a quarterback who played in the SEC last year. Just throw a couple out there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that you think roughly Jeremy Johnson would be as productive as them.
Okay.
You know, like Dylan Thompson in South Carolina.
Okay.
Bo Wallace, somebody like that.
All right. What do they got?
Like 60% completion. You know, Bo Wallace, basically 3,200 yards, 22 touchdowns, and 14 interceptions. Now, he was all over the place. I don't think Jeremy's going to have 14 interceptions.
Right. So it would be closer to 25 or more. And think about this. There's a good chance that we could play 14 games this year. Well, actually, more than that, I guess.
That's right. And that's only 250 yards passing a game. I mean, that's a lot, but that's not an insane number.
No.
So, I mean, I absolutely think Jeremy Johnson could do that and better than that, certainly on the interception side and probably the yardage side and the completion percentage.
It's hard to imagine that a quarterback that only really played two solid years for us could have the touchdown record. I mean, Sullivan played three because he couldn't play as a freshman.
But this is the thing about Jeremy, you know, about Auburn has a run of, you know, historically incredible running backs. But our passing records are not that high a bar to jump over.
Yeah.
I mean, you know the answer, of course. Who is the single season passing leader for Auburn in one season in history?
Cam?
No.
Damian Craig.
Damian Craig.
Damian Craig, right.
Damian Craig in 1997, 3,277 yards.
Yeah. Awesome.
So, I mean, that was a huge year. That's a lot of yards.
Well, we had no running game that year. It was all Damian.
He was a whole offense.
He was, yeah.
But I mean, you could absolutely see. I mean, you know, Nick Marshall last year put up the seventh most passing yards in a single season in Auburn history. And I don't think anybody thinks he had an incredible year passing the ball. So you could absolutely see Jeremy Johnson come in and put up numbers better than that, I think, which would put him in the top five or six in Auburn history.
Well, part of it too. We've only, as far as I know. And I may be forgetting somebody, but we've only had one quarterback in Auburn history start for 4 years. You know who that was?
Stan White.
Yep.
There you go.
And he's not the all-time leader in touchdowns. So, of course, his sophomore and junior years were not that great for the team.
No. He is the all-time career leader in yardage because of that, though.
Yeah.
He has 8,000 yards in his career.
Yeah. So, his freshman year and his senior year were good, but the 91, 92 were just not very good years for the whole team. So,
no. But I think the interesting thing when talking about all these numbers in relation to Jeremy is he could make a huge impact on the Auburn passing records before he's gone.
Yeah.
I mean, the singles – think about this. Here's a simple one. How many touchdowns do you think Jeremy Johnson will throw for? Just pick a number.
How many did Cam have?
Cam had 30. Okay, that was a Heisman level kind of number. Okay, the next best season in Auburn history from a passing touchdown perspective is guess who?
Damian Craig.
Chris Todd.
Oh, that's right. 09.
See, I mean, Chris Todd has the second most passing touchdowns in Auburn history, and he has the fourth most yardage in Auburn history in a single season. And you can't tell me that Jeremy Johnson is not going to do better than that.
Yeah.
I think he is.
Well, how many touchdowns did Todd have?
22.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, Jeremy's going
to. Seth?
Did Nick not have 22 and 13?
No.
Huh.
Nick had 20.
Okay.
Now because he ran for about 10.
Yeah, he ran for a bunch, yeah. So, yeah, I think Jeremy's going to have 26. That's my prediction. I think he's going to have 26. So, mark it down.
There you go. That would be a huge year. That would put him in the Auburn record book.
Put him in the running for the all-time. Okay. All right, what else we got question-wise?
I thought that was a good question.
That was. Yeah, that was good.
All right. Our next – we're weeping ahead here. All right,
go ahead. That gives some.
All right,
some travel.
One question from Rusty Owens.
Okay.
He says, based on recent events, list your top five athletic directors in the SEC. I'm not sure I could name five athletic directors in the SEC.
One that always gets all the attention is Jeremy Foley at Florida, who thinks he's God's gift to hiring people, you know. I don't know about that. But hey, we did have some good news, which is Florida hired a new basketball coach, and it wasn't Bruce Pearl.
Yes, that was good news. Very happy about that.
Okay. Let's see. Well, I know that there's Bill Battle at Alabama, right? Or isn't that who it is? It's the former Tennessee guy that's at Alabama. And there's obviously Jay Jacobs. And, man.
See, again, the athletic directors used to be the old football coach and that kind of stuff, and we all knew who they were. Now they're these people that work their way up through the marketing department or ticket sales or you know, fundraising or whatever, and they're all these executive types. So I don't have any idea who, because the other part is for me, if I really want to answer this question, I want to see like who's doing a good job balancing the budget and bringing in money and that kind of stuff and facilities and that kind of thing. And I'm not sure about the answer.
Is this a leading question? We're supposed to say that Jay Jacobs, because he hired Gus and he hired Bruce Pearl, he hired the softball coach, right? And the baseball coach hasn't been horrible. He got off to kind of a rocky first year, but things seem to be settling down.
Terrible weekend.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And did you see that our women's gymnastics assistant coach just got hired by Florida as their head coach? So she must have been pretty darn good. So, but I don't know. I mean, I feel like there's some smoke on the horizon, maybe a little trouble brewing based on some of the legal stuff going on at Auburn right now with Jay. So maybe I don't know if I'm going to be so quick to throw laurels in his, you know, rosebuds in his path.
We'll see what happens there.
Mm-hmm.
Our next question comes from Johnny Dent, who says, over under 15 in-game spin moves from Rock Thompson this year.
Rock Thomas. 15 for the year?
Yes.
Yeah, I think he'll have that halfway through the season, if not sooner. Because he's going to be getting a lot more carries. Well, we assume he's going to be getting a lot more carries until he gets the Cameron Artis Payne 2013 treatment, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, that's a tough one. Yeah. I could see that. I think, honestly, he's going to, you know, based on what we saw in the spring game, he's going to try and cut back on that.
Yeah.
I think too many of those, you know, he'll be sitting on the bench.
Yeah.
They want him running north and south. Not dancing around.
Yeah. I used to call him, what was it? I used to call him Shrine Game because he ran east west. Now I call him Civil War because he goes north south.
That's good.
Yeah, that was Jerry Glanville. All right. Anything else?
Nope. That's all the listener questions for tonight.
All right. You know what that means?
Factoid of the week.
Oh my God!
Well, I actually have, let's see, quite a few little factoids here I'm going to roll out, but I'll go quickly through them. This is something we've been tweeting about a little bit, and I don't think that maybe everybody's heard it, and I thought I would throw it out there and just let the podcast audience hear it a little bit. I'll make sure I have it right here. Yeah. Let's see if you remember, if you saw the tweets or anything. In the last 33 years, which pretty much goes back to almost the beginning of the Pat Dye era, that's just the years I happen to have numbers on, okay? In the last 33 years in the SEC, what team, what program has the most wins? Just not win percentage or whatever, just who has the most wins? Going back to 1982.
Us?
We're second.
Georgia.
Yeah. Georgia's like number 8 all time, and we're number 9 nationally for that period of time. But here's the funny thing about it. So Georgia has the most wins of any team over the last 33 years, but out of the 6 traditional power teams in the SEC, they are the only one that what?
Has not won a national title.
During that time. That is correct. The only one.
1980.
Yeah, they're on 35 years now. It ain't 53. Wasn't it 57? Yeah, it ain't 53 yet. I'm only going to be satisfied when Georgia wins a national championship and their announcer says 54 years. That's my dream, John, is that Georgia wins a national championship and whoever their announcer is has to say, 54 years of waiting. It's finally over. Yeah, I'll be like, well. During those 33 years, who has the winning record over the other, Auburn or Georgia?
Georgia.
Auburn 17, 16, and 1.
Okay.
So they've been catching up to us a little bit, but we piled on there a little bit back in the 80s and 90s, I think. Let's see. Yeah, we only won at home against Georgia 7 times in the last 33 years. But we own them in Clark County, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of those kind of series, so it's been kind of weird. And here's the last of the little Auburn and Auburn-related and Georgia-related. I got one other bonus. During that span, the last 33 years, Auburn's one loss record is within like 2 games on one of those stats of being exactly the same as Michigan. In other words, over the last 33 years, Auburn's record and Michigan's record are virtually identical. Would you have, is that, does that surprise you, or would you have thought one or the other, or what?
No. I mean, couple of bad years here and there, and they've had a couple of bad years here and there, but overall they've been pretty consistent, and so have we, so that doesn't shock me.
And I believe during that time we've each won one national championship, although we've had several that should have counted or were near misses, and they just had the one split with, I believe, Nebraska.
Yes.
Like, was that 97 or something, I think?
Mm-hmm. Okay. 97. Yeah. Charles Woodson year.
Yeah. Name. Okay, here's your bonus. This is an NFL bonus, but it's Cam Newton related. I just saw this come through Twitter. Cam Newton currently has 33 rushing touchdowns, which is the 10th most all-time quarterbacks in the NFL. And this is only, you know, he's only had 4 years in the NFL. So he could end up very close to the top in rushing touchdowns. I'd have to see the whole list to see how many more he needs. But that's pretty amazing that he's already 10th all-time. Cam, would you have expected that, or does that not surprise you?
It doesn't stun me because a lot of NFL quarterbacks are scared of, you know, don't run at all.
Yeah,
I don't know who's number one, but I'm going to guess it's Fran Tarkenton.
Yeah, you'd have to think it's Fran Tarkenton. I mean, I know, and I'm sure that like Randall Cunningham and and a couple other guys are up there. I wonder if Steve Young.
Steve Young, probably, yeah.
And John,
when he came into the league, he was much more of a runner than a passer.
And so. John Elway might, just from length of his career.
Sure. Those are good. I bet they're all at the top.
Yeah. So, all right. Sorry, we had a little connection problem there, so there may have been a little strange discontinuity, but we're back just in time to wrap things up. So, John, any final thoughts before we sign off for this episode?
No, just that we're in the kind of the dark ages of the dark trough of the off season when we're along with football, and you know, you hope the after baseball and softball season's over, the SEC network moves into kind of showing classic games.
Yes,
that would be nice.
Was the SEC network around before last? Was it? It started like in the summer, didn't it, of last year or something?
Mm-hmm, that's right.
So when do you suppose they'll start giving us blessed classic games?
I think they run kind of one every week right now. Like,
they need to have them on every other hour.
No, I think as we get closer, you know, as you get into like July,
yeah.
I think they're going to run a ton of them.
They better. So. And I think that the first magazine is out.
Oh, yes. There's been some previews out there already in Auburn. There's been some lists out there with Auburn in the top 10 already. So
Yeah. So I was at Barnes & Noble a couple of days ago, and I went over to the shelves and looked around, but I didn't see any actually on the shelves yet, but I'll check back again in the first of the week now and see. I'll go up there this week and see what's out there. So hurry and get those magazines out. We're out here. We're drowning. We're drowning in a sea of baseball, and there's no World Cup this summer to get distracted with. I mean, you know, throw me a lifeline, ESPN or the magazines. throw me something, for crying out loud. Chelsea's already won the championship, so the premiership is over. I mean, I need some help. So. All right, well, we're going to bring this ship in for a dock for tonight. So make sure to go to the Facebook page and check out our I've been posting stuff there pretty regularly. In fact, I just posted on there yesterday a link to the webcam channel on YouTube where you can actually watch them putting up the new Giants scoreboard. How cool is that?
Nice.
So go to the Facebook page and like us there. John, we have over 600 people following us on the Facebook page now.
Awesome.
600, and it's still growing every day. People join in. So come join our little family on the Facebook page, and the more people join, the more I'm trying to get on there and provide content and stuff for them. And always follow John and me on Twitter and the AU Wishbone on Twitter. And be sure to check out Decades of Dominance, Auburn Football in the Modern Era. That's our paperback and Kindle, whichever way you want it, book that covers the last 30-plus years of Auburn football. It's available on Amazon.com and on your Kindle. And Season of Our Dreams about Cam that we just talked about, his awesome year in 2010. So I guess at that point our time is up, and we thank you for yours, John. War Eagle.
War Eagle, man.
Thanks for listening to the Wishbone Podcast. All past episodes are available at auwishbone.podbean.com and via iTunes. For more Auburn fun, join us on Facebook at facebook.com/auwishbone and follow the show on Twitter at auwishbone. War Eagle.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
Thank you for listening to the AU Wishbone Podcast.